Welcome to the 5th annual Roger Corman birthday celebration! Coming to you live from the New World Pictures Podcast Cafe in Boise, Idaho.
Ooh.
Let's see. The rent was good. The rent was good. That's all I can say. Rented these guys out from the Worldies, and
I told them to play a short one. So yeah, I'm hoping like we're getting right to the end here. I gave them explicit instruction. We talked about it. They played me a little bit of this song, which I thought was really inspiring. But I guess. I guess it's the extended version. Guys. No, they can't hear me. They have headphones on like we do.
Yeah.
I'm sure this will end any minute now. I'm sure we're good. Any second. That's really kind of the same theme over again. I have to admit, I had to go a little cheaper this year with the orchestra. This group doesn't have quite the different changes of chord progressions and timing signature, but they do have vocalists, which you can hear, which I think is really nice. It's a nice touch.
I don't feel like they're going to end anytime soon. They are feeling it.
This might be the whole episode, guys. It's just this song. A little disappointed.
We're gonna get this stopped.
I can't hear you. They're so loud. They're so loud in here.
To the guy running the band.
Oh. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
That was gorgeous. From the top, 2, 3, 4.
Don't do that.
See now. All right, I'm going to go to the bathroom. I'll be back. I do have to take a shit, so it's going to take a little while. But
oh, wow. What a poorly timed shit.
That's how I work. I wait for the worst moments, and that's when it happens. Like when I get on a plane.
Oh, my God, you're that guy.
You're a plane pooper.
Everyone's looking over their shoulder like, man, someone's been in that bathroom for a long time.
Right. And then I come out with the same answer. Not me, guys. That wasn't me. That was not me.
But welcome everyone to our 5th annual Roger Corman birthday celebration. I am Ryan. With me as always is Mark.
I'm so happy to be here. I flew in for this, and I'm really excited to have the opportunity to talk with both of you tonight.
And Erica?
Feeling it. Woo! Will this be the year, Mark and Ryan, that the stars of Mark and Erica and Ryan align and we all pick the same movie? Will this be the year?
It could be. You never know. Because this year, this is, of course, something we've been doing for 5 years. We're celebrating Roger Corman. Of course, this is the first celebration that we're doing post his passing last year. So he would have been 99 this year, but instead of doing what we usually do, Erica and I would watch a movie, Mark would watch a movie that was directed, occasionally maybe produced, but we're trying to stick by directed by Roger Corman. And then we'd see if we'd watch the same one, because our initial birthday celebration, we were supposed to watch the same movie and didn't. And we decided to, keep that tradition.
To be fair, 2/3 of us did. 1/3 of us didn't.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was a difficult...
We don't want to name names, but...
And I would encourage people to listen to that first one for the simple fact that the person who didn't watch the same movie thought that they did and didn't come to that realization until really late in the episode.
Yeah, you can hear it in the episode. The realization happens.
You can hear the realization.
In the episode. We realize. And so now we just try to see. We go off on our own. But this year, Eric and I have watched our own individual movies away from one another.
Look at Erica, guys. She's growing up. Look at her just going out on her own. Look at her. Come on, little just bird. Growing up. Look at her. Just watching a movie all on her own with the help of her husband and son to get it to play because she was home by herself and doesn't understand how to use the Blu-ray player. How upsetting is that for listeners that I can't even run my own Blu-ray player? Can't do it. Can't do it without help. Needed phone support.
Three movies, all directed by Roger Corman. That's what we do when on these yearly birthday celebrations. We talk about the movies that Roger Corman directed because once he started New World, he didn't release movies that he directed. In fact, he didn't direct. He directed his penultimate movie just as he started the company, and then he wouldn't direct again until 1990 when he released Frankenstein Unbound, which is one of the movies that we talked about in one of these episodes. The first episode we talked about The House of Usher, and ultimately we also talked about The Mask of the Red Death. It was a surprise entry.
You know, I know that we try to avoid spoilers on this podcast, but just so people know, Mask of the Red Death and The House of Usher are not the same movie, and they don't have the same plots.
They really have some
of the same actors, but that is where the similarities end.
And so far, throughout these many years, we have not had a crossover where we actually have watched the same movie. Will it happen tonight? I don't know. Let's find out, though. Erica, you went out on your own this year, and you watched your own Corman movie at your request. Get your trailer ready. Let's listen to what your Corman selection is going to be.
Supposing a more powerful form of royal jelly could be obtained from the queen wasp, for example.
Socially, the queen wasp is on level with a black widow spider.
Oh, no. I see danger.
Those are my terms, Mr. Janice Starlin will be the next guinea.
A woman of fantastic desires, sponsoring a scientist with fantastic theories, and demanding fantastic results.
How old do I look? Tell me! How old?
23.
What if she wanted to be... What if the correct answer was 16?
From this point on, it's mostly just screaming and songs. Screaming and music. So I got it there.
1959's The Wasp Woman. Okay. What made you decide on this one, Erica?
Well, I thought it would be timely, given the Oscar nominations.
The nest of wasps that we just got rid of.
Yes. Yes. On a personal note, we just had a swarm.
We had a swarm of bees
appear outside of our house in the tree that's right outside of our house. And it was very fast and very unexpected and
very loud.
All of a sudden, very loud. So Ryan and I were like, happened to be home. And I'm like, what is that? What is that noise? It sounds like buzzing. And it was just hundreds. I don't know. Easily hundreds, maybe thousands of bees that had just swarmed in the tree outside of our house. And I was like,
cone shape off of a limb. And we were like, what are they doing? And we thought maybe they were creating a hive. We were like, what's happening? But Erica did a little research, real-time research.
I really stepped out of my comfort zone, did a little real-time research and learned that they were moving the queen, that they were moving her and then they were putting the swarm there because she needed to be moved and they were protecting her until they could move her to another more permanent location. And sure enough, in a few hours, they were gone just like that. As quickly as they appeared, they disappeared. And so with that, and then based on this year's Oscar nominations, you know, The Substance, I thought it sounded interesting, of someone who was on a kind of quest or was on a mission or a journey to, you know, preserve their youth and look younger. It seemed very on point. And mm-hmm. so, yes, I watched 1959's The Wasp Woman.
Well, and tell us a little bit about it. I did not watch this one, so.
Oh, and I've Ryan, never seen did it. You watch this one?
This is not what I watched, but I have seen The Wasp Woman because,
okay.
you know, but okay. I've seen it before, but this is not what I watched for this.
So Roger directed this one and directed mm-hmm. and produced this screenplay by Leo Gordon.
Yep.
Starring Susan Cabot, or maybe Cabot.
Cabot.
Fred Isley and Barbara Morris. Mm-hmm. And essentially it's about a woman played by Susan Cabot. She plays Janice Starlin, who is the owner of this sort of women's cosmetics company, like a women's beauty and cosmetics company, and her sales are dropping. Because apparently, according to her all male staff, it's because she's aging. And she looks older. Yeah. And so they literally say this to her, like, well, you don't look like you once did, Janice. And it's like, Jesus. Okay. Maybe we just need a new marketing, you know.
No. Campaign. No. A different campaign, maybe? Like, let's do something different here.
Nope, it's because you're old, Janice.
Also, we need you to talk with HR. We've got a little bit of an issue here.
HR never featured. So she meets up with this scientist. I am unclear on how her and scientist Dr. Eric Zinthrop, played by Michael Mark, he's been experimenting on his honey farm. Like, they call it his honey farm.
Yeah.
Which made me laugh. Mm-hmm. I'm like, isn't there a different, like, his hive or his, like,
is that a
his
brothel?
Honey farm? I don't know. So he starts experimenting with wasps, and she's very intrigued by this, and they have a conversation about her taking the jelly from the wasp, the queen wasp, to try to, you know, do these experiments that will restore her youth. And he definitely practices this on animals and brings in two guinea pigs once he's concocted the serum, and he brings her early favorite scene, brings in these two guinea pigs and injects it into one. And it's kind of, he injects it and puts it back in the cage off screen. And then they talk a bit and she's like, oh my, and they show it and it's absolutely a rat and not a guinea pig. And she's like, look how young it is. And I'm like, and it's a completely different animal, whatever. Then he puts it into a cat.
It's funny that the guinea pig didn't look like a rabbit, because Mountaintop Motel Massacre. I think that's what confused me, is they used the serum on guinea pigs and made them look like rabbits. Right?
That's right. So he uses it on a cat.
I don't know if you've ever seen a rabbit, Mark. I'm just, or a guinea pig. Yeah, maybe so I don't.
Sure.
Maybe that's,
I'm sure,
the
if
thing.
You've ever seen either.
They're extinct, so I don't think that I'll ever see them at this.
Notice
point,
you
right?
had never see a rabbit and a guinea pig in the same room. You ever notice that? Never.
What's
together,
their
guys.
Story? What's their deal? Why are they so mysterious?
So she gets this jelly, she puts it on her face.
She gets the royal jelly of the queen wasp.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, as you do.
Well, first he does it, he injects a cat with the royal
yes,
jelly
that's
concoction,
right.
And it turns the cat into a kitten, and she's like, oh, you must experiment on me. Like, I must be. He's like, I have never tried it on people. And she's like, you
sales
have
are
to
down.
Do me. Yeah, sales are down. It must be me. You must try it on me. Because she's convinced after she sees this kitten, he's got to experiment on her. Well, He's like, okay, uh-oh, I'll experiment on you. And he starts to experiment on her. And then after he's injected her, he goes to the lab one night and he sees that the kitten is out of the cage. And up on the ceiling is the kitten. It's like, it has like these weird, like, I guess, wings that are growing in.
Yep.
And it comes after him and attacks him and he kills it. And then he's like,
you don't fuck with Dr. Eric.
Yeah, you don't fuck with Dr. Zinthrop. But then he goes for a walk and gets hit by a car.
I mean, he's not impervious to
yeah,
vehicular manslaughter.
It's late at night. Science can't just crack that. A kitten. Yeah.
Also, was she wanting to just look more youthful, or did she want to be six again?
I think just youthful. And I will say, she doesn't look bad.
No, that's what's funny about it, that they're all like, ugh.
Clearly tried to age her, yeah, and they've done some old age makeup on her forehead, but like, she isn't an unattractive lady. And so she, in Dr. Zinthrop's absence, goes and continues to give herself these injections. And she looks positively 23, as you heard in the trailer. She asks her secretary, how old do I look? And she's like, 23? And so that's her big claim to fame, is the royal jelly of the queen wasp.
Was she giving a honest response or just trying not to get fired?
Good call. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think a bit of both.
Yeah.
I mean, she could have just as easily been like, what the shit? I was going for 19.
Yeah.
You're saying I look like 23?
That's true. That's why she said it with a question mark. She's like, I don't know what the right answer is. I'm not 100%. I want to say 28, but I'm going to say 23?
Mm-hmm.
But of course, it has, as many sci-fi movies in the 1950s, like The Fly and things like that, it doesn't go well. What happens to poor Susan Cabot playing the wasp woman?
Yeah, Janice Starlin. So at night, unbeknownst to her workers and Dr. Zinthrop, because he's suffered this, you know, car accident, she continues to take the serum, but she's, you know, running low on it. So she finds Dr. Zinthrop. She brings him to the office where she works and has a room set up for him, and has a nurse and has care for him because she needs him to, her business is, the success of her company is riding on his ability to recreate this serum. However, at nighttime, she becomes the wasp woman and she's bloodthirsty and she starts to kill people.
Hmm.
And so it's mostly workers that she kills.
Okay. People that got her age wrong.
Yeah, yeah. One in particular that she kills, or I believe it's the first person that she kills from her staff, is a character who was always smoking a pipe. And I just thought it was hilarious because he's sneaking around a lot and he sneaks and like spies on Dr. Zinthrop. But I'm like, don't you just smell that guy coming? He always has a pipe in his mouth. Aren't you like, hey, Bill, is that you? Like, are you just around the corner? I can see a puff of smoke. Like, the way this man is able to, like, sneak around. I'm like, is everybody else nose blind? Does nobody else see this guy with the pipe coming?
Everybody could smoke everywhere. So there was the smell of smoke probably was just pervasive. It was like in all corners. So you wouldn't, wouldn't have hit you.
That's so
like
true.
Yeah.
I'm sure it wouldn't be as big of, you know, as big of a deal as it would be now, where you'd be like, I can smell you, sir. I know someone's in here. Sir or ma'am, I can smell a pipe. She kills him. She goes after one of her assistants. But ultimately, I mean, she does not succeed, and she goes after Mary, question mark? All the characters have very simple names.
Yeah.
Mary, yes. She goes after Mary, and she does not succeed because another colleague who is fond of Mary and has feelings for her comes and saves the day and rescues her. And then Dr. Zinthrop, bless him, drags himself out of his bed, and he throws acid at Janice while she's in wasp form, and she falls out a window. and falls to her death.
Yeah.
But that's it. It's a brisk, like 63, 73 minutes, something like that. Super short. It's black and white. I put the subtitles on hilariously because I don't know. I felt like I couldn't hear it. Maybe that was me. Maybe I just needed to turn it up. I don't know. It felt like user error at the time. It isn't particularly hard to understand. The Wasp Woman mask is hilarious.
It is.
It is like, it looks like two tennis balls with like blue globs on it and a fake nose. Yes, it's Brian showing it from the box. And then sort of like a matted down wig with just terrible little antennae in the front. It's when you see her in it, it's there's nothing terrifying about it. It's in fact hilarious. And she just sort of moves like still like herself, but she's, I guess, strong, like strong enough to like knock people down and but
it's a it's
I'm not
a
gonna lie, it's not bad. Like I enjoyed it. And I really in particularly enjoyed the scenes when she's Janice and she's dealing with the staff, but she's having these headaches and because she's, you know, fighting the, I guess, waspiness of all of it. I thought it was really good, actually, and her like the lengths that she would go to kind of preserve her company, I thought it was actually really good. I really enjoyed it. So yeah,
it's I recommend. It's an interesting movie. No surprise that The Fly is released 1 year prior. This is what
weird
Roger
how that
Corman
works out.
This is what Roger Corman says about it in the movie world of Roger Corman. He says this about the Wasp Woman. He said, "This was one of the first pictures I made for my own company, Film Group. Since I was now financing films from my own savings, I budgeted the pictures at $20,000 to $50,000.
Yeah, I read that this one was made for an estimated budget of $50,000, and they made it in less than 2 weeks.
Yep.
Yeah, that tracks. That's
what, he's about to back you up. This one was made for $50,000 and has a good performance by the leading lady, Susan Cabot, who is good. She plays the head of a cosmetics. She plays the head of a cosmetics firm who tries to increase business by incorporating a rejuvenation wasp jelly into her products. The idea occurred to me after reading a magazine article about the use of bee jelly or some such thing in women's cosmetics." I mean, it might have been related to the fact, though, that he also saw that The Fly was released last year and was like, what the heck? And then he asked Leo Gordon, who had written Cry Baby Killer for him. That was a movie he produced with that was, I believe, the debut of Jack Nicholson. And Leo Gordon would also write The Terror and Tower of London. And so he was a screenwriter that Corman would go back to a few times over. But yeah, I've saw this one too, and it's a fun little campy, short and sweet black and white sci-fi film. It's definitely Roger Corman's The Fly for sure. It's his go at that one.
Yes. Yeah.
All right, great. Mark, this was not your selection. So what?
No, it wasn't. And
what was the movie you watched?
I'm disappointed that I didn't watch this one because the one I watched, I don't know how much I'm going to be able to say about it, but we'll just go ahead and play the trailer.
Men make up this daring unit of skiing GIs, the regular army sergeant.
You can't make an army man in 8 weeks. Or 90 days.
The 90-day wonder lieutenant, who's had 19 tough fighting months of seasoning.
The ski troops are the division's only eyes behind the German lines.
You've known them all, or guys just like them.
The new secret weapons are almost ready. And then you will see the trap into which you have walked.
This is the untold story of men who fought the enemy and the elements.
Come on, girls!
To attempt one of the most daring feats of World War II.
Would you look at that mammoth jam and bridge, Sarge?
It's an almost impossible target from the air, but not impossible from the ground.
They advanced under fire in an effort to cut the enemy supply lines.
Yes, I watched 1960s Ski Troop Attack. This is a black and white World War II movie. It stars Michael Frost, who played Sam in Lassie from the 1970s and from the series Lassie. Also, Frank Wolfe, who starred in, he had a very short career because sadly he committed suicide in 1971, but he was in 1971 Giallo, called Death Walks on High Heels, directed by Luciano Ercole. I'm sure I'm murdering that name, but and also Wally Campo, who appeared in Roger Corman's Little Shop of Horrors and was also in the Fall Guy TV series. And then the only female in this movie, Sheila Noonan, a Los Angeles actress who's playing a German. And she also starred in Roger Corman's A Bucket of Blood. So this is a movie that is about a ski troop, a U.S. military. You're on mute, Ryan.
And Richard Sinatra, don't forget. Please.
And
don't.
Richard Sinatra, yes.
Which
and Roger Corman playing a German lieutenant. Because
Blake and you'll miss him, yeah.
Right. So this covers a U.S. military team who is, they're all a ski troop, and hence the name, and they are surveying a certain area in Germany, and they finish surveying the area and making sure that it's clear of any German troops when they stumble upon a bridge. Because they're recognizing that, hey, we've cleared out this area, but there's Germans that still keep coming in and supplies that keep coming in. How are they doing it? And they see this bridge that's up on a mountainside. And this is where the train is able to get through and provide supplies for the German military. And they decide, okay, we've got to blow this thing up. Now, if you are really into Nordic skiing or cross-country skiing, not really downhill, but Nordic skiing, this is a movie for you because there is a lot of cross-country skiing in this movie.
Loads
of it. And they do come across a number of different German troops. The thing that's a little bit confusing, or I would say not necessarily confusing, but challenging about this movie is that the uniforms for the German soldiers are the exact same as the U.S. soldiers. So you never really know who are you rooting for, because they will do these far off shots of people shooting at each other. And you're like, I don't know. Did a U.S. military guy just die, or was it a German military guy that died? I don't know, because they're both wearing white suits and it's impossible to tell them apart.
And then they put in some stock footage of actual German soldiers and you're like, well, that's not what anyone looks like.
Right. So they do intersperse actual World War II footage, which of course you can tell because there's a graininess to that film that the rest of the movie doesn't have.
Right.
You know, this group of soldiers, you get to know them because there's a lot of chatting. And funny enough, like by the time they find the bridge and they decide, okay, we have to get up this mountain and we have to blow up this bridge. There's another German troop that is coming after them that is seemingly right behind them, but that doesn't stop them from stopping and just like eating for a little while, even though the troop is presumably like 100 yards away. And why the German troop doesn't say, we should just ambush them right now because they're eating and talking. And we can hear them talking because it's in the middle of snowy mountain where there isn't any other noise. They're pretty chill. They're the chillest soldiers I think I've ever seen
in a military movie. It's a war movie with breaks. When you were like, yes. Oh, you were like, oh, they say war is hell, but they don't tell you that war also includes some breaks, some break time, yeah. Some downtime.
This movie they shot in Deadwood, South Dakota.
Correct.
Mm. Deadwood, South Dakota, which is famous because Wyatt Earp was there for a little while. And that's where
he was murdered. Wild Bill, hence the show.
No, he left. He left.
Oh, he
actually.
Left. He left. But who was
he left?
Who
was, it was Wild Bill Hickok.
Wild Bill and Hickok
Glennie
was
Jane.
Shot there. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. They
first
were
season
shot
of Deadwood,
and they are buried there. Ironically, the series Deadwood was not shot in South Dakota. It was shot in Newhall, Fraser Park, Azusa, and Santa Clarita. But
Semanticast.
Semanticast does a deep dive on this.
That's his geography cast. His geography geographcast.
What podcasts are you involved in, Mark? My God.
It's exhausting. I am sitting here podcasting
like
pretty much every night. Not a lot of listeners yet, but I feel like the geocast is going to get
traction. It's going to get them.
I looked up. I researched 173-minute movie for. I'm pooped. I don't know how you do it, Ryan's
Mark,
research. I don't know how Mark you do
just,
it.
Mark just has been sitting in this position for a week. He cannot stand up.
I just after this podcast, I just kind of go to sleep. Wait for the next podcast to start.
Gets breaks just like war.
I kind of consider all of these podcasts my personal battle.
Yeah.
So,
thank you, Mark. That's such a nice compliment. Thank
you. Every week we take down a New World film. It feels like a little battle.
This movie, like yours, Erica, is only about an hour and 12 minutes.
Ugh. Nice.
And they don't get to the bridge to blow it up until 57 minutes into this movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's a lot of
same.
Climbing
Wasp
up a mountain.
Woman, I should have noted the actual moment you see her become a wasp, but it's when it's almost over. Like, the entire movie goes on before you finally see her in wasp form.
Yeah, it takes some time. Takes some build up.
Takes its time, yeah. It's both slow and fast.
And you don't get to the big moment where they plant the explosives on the bridge until 57 minutes into this movie. They do successfully blow it up right as the train is coming over. But this movie was directed by Roger Corman. This was Charles B. Griffiths was the writer. So, you know, sort of that's the 1-2 punch of early Roger Corman movies.
Sure.
The little trivia on IMDb that I thought was funny was while they were shooting this, the actors were positioned for a ski down, ski down a mountain, and the snow had just snowed. So it was all virgin snow. And when they called for action, the sound waves started an avalanche. Nobody was hurt, but Roger Corman was so frustrated by this event. The only thing he could do is he pulled out his bullhorn and yelled, "Stop that snow!" As though the crew had any capacity to stop an avalanche from happening.
Wow. Stop the snow.
He also used high
That's
school
amazing.
Ski teams played the skiers. So they had to get them on weekends and shoot them like skiing.
Wait, didn't we watch this movie?
We did. We watched it last year. This was our selection. And not only did you not remember, neither did Mark.
I didn't until I saw that there was high school people that did it. And I was like, was that Avalanche or was that this movie?
Yeah,
and I couldn't remember. So yeah. I was like, fuck it. I'm just going to continue watching this.
As you were describing it, I was like, God, I feel like we watched one that was like this. But you know what? A lot of them are kind of samey.
Sure.
So
yeah,
I was
sure.
Like, maybe there's one I didn't realize.
Yeah, we watched it last year. This was our movie last year.
I know it's Roger's birthday and it's his moment. And we're supposed to focus on him, but look at how much I've grown, you guys. I watched my own movie on my own. I did my own research. I found a trailer by myself.
Look at you.
And now I recognized after minutes and minutes of talking about it that Mark's talking about a movie that I've actually seen and already talked about.
And I would like to say that I've grown and I heard you guys talk about this movie last year and I was jealous. And so I was like, I'm going to watch it. But really, I just forgot that you guys watched this. And there was enough connective tissue that I was like, I think you guys talked about this movie.
Guys, we had our first crossover where we actually watched the same movie. It's just a year late.
Oh my God, we did it.
I mean, we did it, guys.
We did it. Here, let's hold hands, guys.
Roger Corman.
Hold hands.
He's directed 50 odd movies and we finally watched the same one just a year apart.
Aww, but we did it.
Yeah, we did it.
Here's so happy.
Here's what Roger Corman says about Ski Troop Attack in the movie world of Roger Corman. He said, "This was the only time I ever played a part amounting to more than a one or two line bit in any one of my films. I had hired a former German ski trooper to play the leader of the German ski troop, but he broke his leg the day before we were to begin shooting. We were on location in Deadwood, South Dakota, and no time to replace him, so I had to play the role myself. The Deadwood High School ski team played the American ski troopers, and the lead high school ski team played the German ski troopers. In some of the battles, of which I was unfortunately a part, the high school rivalry made the fighting spirit only too authentic." He was truly there to shoot Beast from Haunted Cave, which was the directorial debut of Monty Hellman, who directed Cockfighter for New World Pictures, and which is a good movie.
Were people allowed to talk in that one or not?
They did talk, and they talked a lot. And in fact, that's the better parts of it. There is a beast in a cave, but really the better parts of people talking. So, of course, when Roger Corman's like, "Well, what a great location. Why don't we just whip together a script, Chuck, and let's make a second movie while we're here?" That's the Corman way.
Yes, it is. It is. So, I mean, really, what are the odds that I'm going to pick a movie that you guys talked about that I didn't remember? So, listeners, you're welcome.
You're the one to tell us what those numbers might be. That's your job. You got to crunch those numbers.
I'll have that for the next episode.
Well, I watched a totally different movie than both of you, and I picked it for a specific reason, but here's the movie that I watched.
He discovered a gas that increases the rate of neuron depletion. You see, neurons begin dying off in everyone over the age of 25, and that's when this gas gets them. It causes death from instant old age.
Small start of a brand new day. Yesterday's cast and gone. You and me got to find another way. Now's the time to get it on.
If I'm not Godhead, will the real God please play something for me?
This is the real God speaking. Will the owner of the dark blue Mustang convertible, license number TUV525, please turn off your parking lot?
Why don't you make up a beautiful word for lovemaking?
Rainy day deferment.
Father, I have to know, is police brutality really a sin?
Only on Friday.
Marissa, are you pregnant or something?
Yes.
Since when?
Oh, since Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels played the Astrodome.
I'm a Texas Ranger. Remember, we always get our man.
No, that's the Mounties.
We don't like your type in these parts, kid. Dirty, unwashed, hippie anarchists coming into Texas.
Texas, man, this is New Mexico.
No wonder I feel so ineffectual. I'm out of my natural environment.
I feel a sign coming on.
That was a hell of a sign.
That's right. So I watched 1970s Gas.
Nice.
Gas, or It Became Necessary to Destroy the World in Order to Save It. A very unique entry into Roger Corman's filmography. It becomes his second to last movie he ever directed. And there's a couple reasons why I chose it. I had seen it before. And I admit, before the time I saw it before, I did not like it. I was very much like, this sucks. And this Blu-ray I have of it, I was almost like, well, I almost threw it away. But so it's still not great. It's a mess, but it's kind of a wild mess to watch. It's got a lot of people in it. Ben Vereen's in it. Bud Cort of Harold and Maude. Talia Shire is credited as Talia Coppola. She got her start as well as Francis Ford Coppola, her brother, got her start also acting in Roger Corman movies, starting with The Wild Racers, and she was in a couple of these movies. The soundtrack, also Cindy Williams of
B-52s?
No, Laverne and Shirley. Oh, but I mean, shit. You know, right. So to say nothing of the B-52s singer. she didn't get her start here, but there's also the music is by Country Joe and the Fish, but really just the Fish, not Country Joe, though Country Joe does make a appearance. But there's another reason why I picked it too. There's two reasons. For one, on the Roger Corman side, this is the last movie he directs for American International Pictures, which is where he directed a bunch of his movies before. And he did all his Poe movies, for instance, and lots of movies he had made for them. And he was kind of getting sick of them. And finally, he made this one, and they made a lot of edits to the movie.
Hmm.
And he kind of was like, all right, that's it. I'm done making movies for AIP. And it kind of moved him into starting New World Pictures. Even though it took a little bit of time for it to come out. It basically comes out, really comes out in like 71 when he's already started New World Pictures. But the other reason why I also chose it is that George Armitage wrote the film, and George Armitage, he also appears in the movie, and he got his start writing this script and writing stuff for Corman, and he would eventually write and direct Private Duty Nurses, and he would also direct Darktown Strutters for New World Pictures, and then he would go on to direct movies like Miami Blues and Gross Point Blank and Last of the Finest, and he passed away also. Just earlier this year, actually, in February. So there was another reason why I was kind of wanting to, you know, I was kind of thinking about the two of them. Roger Corman was in the Oscars In Memoriam section, which I was pleased to see he was there, but George Armitage was not. So it made me kind of think of the two of them. And this is the first script that George writes for him. And it is the best way I can describe it, because I can't go through any of the plot, but it is, it's like Roger Corman. I think the first time I saw it, my review was like, it's like a sketch. It's a sketch movie made by a sketch group who's never written a sketch. But like, it is like this group of people, but they just go through all these different wacky scenarios as they kind of travel around the world trying to find, essentially, I think they're trying to find some, you know, great place where everybody can be, because there is this gas, as the trailer said, that sort of kills everyone that's older or above 25. So it's all young people inheriting the earth. And I think Corman made it to try to be like, well, we're all just going to like make the same mistakes. I don't know. Which is interesting. He's like in his early 40s at this point that he makes this movie. And it's so very much about the 60s, even though it's at the tail end of the 60s, but it's very much talking about the 60s. And like the peace love movement, and it's a lot of jokes like that. So it's really more like Roger Corman doing an extended episode of Laugh-In is what it feels like. It's just filled with like gags and bits and, you know, just very, very jokey, silly movie. And it is chopped up. By the time, I think it premiered in a film festival in 1970, and at that point, Roger Corman was already... He was already shooting his last movie, which was actually for United Artists, which was Von Richthofen and Braun. And he was shooting that. And at that point, he had started New World Pictures with, you know, Stephanie Rothman making Student Nurses and also Angels Die Hard. And so, but those were movies that he was not directing. So he was sort of in Ireland shooting Von Richthofen while New World was starting. And so while he was gone away, that's when AIP decided to recut Gas. And there's in particular a shot at the tail end of the movie, because God, as you heard in the trailer, was this character that was in the movie commenting on the movie a lot. God only pops up once or twice because they trimmed out all those parts. And there was a big ending shot, like a big giant shot where it like goes in close and then it goes back and goes back and goes back. It's this big, huge tracking shot that showed this giant mesa where all these characters were on. A giant shot that you would never see in a Roger Corman movie. And he was so proud of it. And they trimmed the whole shot out.
Oh, bummer.
And so he is just like, was like, forget this. I'm never going to do anything for them. He did produce a couple movies for AIP, even during the 70s when he owned New World. But he was pretty much done with them. Now, on AIP's part, they say that, hey, we didn't do anything. It was Roger Corman's editors that came in and they edited it. And Roger said that he knew it needed some editing, and they are the ones that trimmed it all out, not us. So, I mean, who's to say, I guess, but according to Corman, he was really upset about it. And so he got very disillusioned because of that. In fact, he said in his book, his memoir, he said, this is what he says about the shot. I ended the film with a spectacular shot from on top of the mesa with a view 60, 70 miles to the horizon. God, who was a running character throughout the film, made his final comments on what went on. There must have been 300 people on top of that mesa. It was one of the greatest shots I'd ever achieved in my life, and AIP cut out the entire shot. They ended the picture on a couple's cliched kiss because they didn't like what God was saying. The picture ended and made no sense. Final cut approval had never been put in writing at AIP. It was more of a tacit agreement. AIP had grown into the biggest independent in the U.S. It was now a publicly held company. The more reverent the film, the greater the financial risk. So he basically was like, at that point, he was like, you know what? Forget this. I'm going to start New World.
Well, I mean, I guess to a degree, thank you, AIP, for cutting out that shot, because
yeah,
we wouldn't have this podcast
that's
otherwise.
Right. That's right. So, I mean, I don't think this was like the, I think it was just, this was like the final straw, but I think that he was getting frustrated with them anyway. And, you know, as he said about starting New World, I think he was frustrated that they made a lot of the money that he would make off those movies.
Yeah.
So he's also sure. Like, why am I letting them make all the money and I should make all that money? But it's such a weird movie. And again, it's not about anything. At best, I can describe that they're this sort of hippie commune family that's traveling around and trying to find this new place, and they keep running across, it felt very much like Stryker, this band of former football players who are all still dressed in their football uniforms, but they're driving around in dune buggies, and Bud Cort eventually joins them but then kind of wants to come back, and I think in the end they sort of all but it's about nothing. It's just like, here's an idea. Let's do a little scene about this. Here's an idea. Let's do a little scene about that. And it's really about almost nothing. The through line of there being gas that kills all these old people is done in like a very quick couple shots of a montage. It's barely the entire high concept of the movie is barely introduced. In fact, it's mostly introduced in this beginning opening. The opening of the movie is this animated stuff between a general, which sounds like John Wayne, and like a politician of some kind, and then they release this gas in an animated sequence. I was like, but you know, the thing that also made me think this time through was, you know, Roger had made The Trip, and he was becoming a really interesting filmmaker at the time, and he finally said, you know what, I'm throwing all this in, from like The Wasp Woman and Ski Troop Attack, you know, where he was like just, you know, making, I don't know, let's do a cheapo war film or let's rip off The Fly. You know, the Trip, he was really coming up with some cool, you know, stuff. He was really pushing himself. He makes Bloody Mama afterwards, of course, which is like, you know, pretty. And before that, he did St. Valentine's Day Massacre, which you had watched, Mark.
Yep. That was a good one. I really liked that one.
And you really dug that one. So he was kind of like, he'd done The Wild Angels. He'd done St. Valentine's Day Massacre. He did The Trip, which was a popular movie. And eventually Peter Fonda and Jack Nicholson would go off and do,
a couple other movies.
Easy Rider.
And, it's a shame that they didn't get bigger. You know, they could have been like big, real stalwarts of Hollywood.
Too bad.
But. And he does Bloody Mama, which is a bit more of his, like, you know, his exploitation style. But like, then he goes into Gas and he makes this, you know, hippie comedy. It's like, Roger, you were really going some really interesting places. Mm-hmm. And while the movie Gas is a mess, there's no, everyone would describe it that way. There's no one that's not going to, especially Roger Corman's not going to describe it as nothing but a complete mess. It's edited together. It doesn't make any sense. If Roger did indeed hire the editors who recut this thing, you should have fired them. It's just crazy. It just doesn't make any sense. And it's just like, but it's kind of, watching it again, I was like, actually, this is kind of fascinating to watch, because it's just, it's not at all what you would think of when you think of a Roger Corman movie. And for that, I think it's an interesting curio in his catalog, because it's just, you just wouldn't think of Roger making a movie like this. Like, what? It's so weird. And if he hadn't gotten screwed, to your point, Mark, he wouldn't have maybe started New World Pictures. And then, but on the other hand, I wonder if he had just been able to release the movie as he had, where would he have gone after that? Like, if he had been able to just have his whole, his vision actually come across. I mean, failure or not. And I think they did, despite all this, despite how weird this movie is, I believe they still made some money off of it. I don't think it was a giant success, but they still made some money off of it, because it wasn't made for very much. But, you know.
I look forward to talking about it next year.
Yeah. I'm excited for you to forget all that we just talked about.
Oh, I was going to say, you know, it's so funny. I almost watched this. Like, I had it. I was holding it. I had it out. And I was like, I don't know what made me look through the stack again. But I did. And I was like, you know what? I just, Wasp Woman called out to me. And I changed at the last minute. I almost watched Gas.
It is a weird one. It is a weird one. I would recommend watching it, but I just go in knowing, like, this one, it really, truly makes no sense. And it really, you have to just kind of give in to the spirit of it, because it just doesn't, which is weird for Roger. He doesn't make movies that are so, you know, weird like this, and don't, like, maybe they're chopped up a little bit. It has that element where, like, some of these movies where they're chopped up a little too much and you can't quite get the story. It takes a little bit to get into the story, because, like, Cover Girl Models or something like that, where he chopped it up just a little too much. But, like, but yeah, this one's just such a weird film for him. But this is what he says about it in the movie World of Roger Corman. He says, this was an almost surreal comedy. The premise was that as a result of the accidental leak of a nerve gas developed by the military industrial complex, everyone in the world over the age of 25 died, leaving the young people free to take over. And the story, which was always comedically focused.
Why it should be the reverse? I mean, let the 40 plus crowd, you know, shit, take out the youngs. Who gives a shit? Just let's just ride out the rest of this crazy blue planet with just olds. Why not?
Spoiler alert, the youngs don't know how to set up their society either, which has been done and many times over. You know, but yeah. Various groups of young people attempted to cope with the conflicting beliefs and psychology they encountered in one another on their way to a gathering place where they hoped to find a new utopia. Ultimately, the picture became a series of variations on the idea that those who fail to learn from history are destined to repeat it. There were a number of good actors in the film, then unknown, including Talia Shire, later in The Godfather and Rocky, Ben Vereen, Broadway and television star, Bud Cort of Harold and Maude, and Cindy Williams of B-52s. Oh, okay. No. Of ABC's Laverne and Shirley.
Got him.
The picture was the last
Don't
I directed.
Don't worry. You can just pull that joke on him next year, too. He's not going to remember.
I'll laugh even harder next year.
Yeah. That feels familiar, that joke. The picture was the last I directed for AIP, and it was one of the experiences that prompted me to found my own production and distribution company, New World Pictures, since AIP found Gas overly controversial and made cuts in it, which I believe damaged the picture. And he only directs Von Richthofen and Brown for United Artists, and then years later did Frankenstein Unbound, and that was it. So
yeah.
But I just, you know, it's an interesting movie. And these are all three really interesting movies of Roger's career. He is, you know, he's still a fascinating guy. There's a couple movies. I'm almost excited for next year because I think I know what I'm going to watch for next year. Just another weird movie that Roger made. Which I think Mark has seen, but we have not talked about yet in these celebrations.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely covered a wide swath of the types of movies that he made. You can't say that he didn't, he wasn't diversified in his subject matter.
No, that's true. That's true. And that is it for Roger Corman's birthday celebration number 5. We hope you guys had a good time here in the New World Pictures Podcast Cafe. There you are.
Woo! They were all ordering drinks. I saw them all walk up at the same time.
It is a 2-drink minimum, and we kind of plowed through these. So they called
last call. So yeah.
It's a 2-drink minimum with no table service. So. Not a good system.
Well, they still love it.
They still are happy, you know. We hope you had a good time. Hey, happy birthday, Roger. We miss you. Hope you had a good time listening to this episode. If you want to listen to our other episodes, including our former Roger Corman birthday celebrations, go to our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. You can find all of our episodes and a t-shirt. Buy a t-shirt. The money goes straight to our pockets, but please spend it anyway. It helps us be able to continue to do the show. And we'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast, a part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody. Oh, no.
Come on. I had told them, when you hear goodbye, everybody, play again.
They didn't go to the bar. No. They were just waiting patiently.
They were violins ready. Is it now?
Just standing waiting. You know what? They're professionals. I gotta give them that.
They are.
Pros.
Do you guys have $10? Because I need to tip them. And I don't have any cash.
$10? $10?
Yikes.
Like I said, there were budget cuts this year. You know, the economy is tough. So
we're tipping them in Roger Corman fashion. Here's $10 to just go amongst the whole group.
Why don't we just give them a producer credit on this episode and then call it a day?
It's easy. Then we keep the money in our pockets.
I think they heard that I don't have any cash. That's why they stopped playing. So
oh, no.
Let's go. Head to the back door. Erica, you go first.